Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Barrymore. We are at episode number 8, and I want to thank all of you for your continued support. I'd like to give a special shout-out to my wife and to Pam and Steve Milford, because without them, this podcast wouldn't be possible. My next guest is a local legend. He's a pilot. He's the founder of Bone Stock Racing. Fresh back from Romania and racing the Red Bull Romaniacs. Coming up next, this is Howard Lawrence.
I was actually thinking about this, and I was thinking, there's lots of guys that have thought about doing Romaniacs or doing something like that. And I did, so I might have some insight for them if you ask the right questions.
What gave you the idea to go for Romaniacs?
Actually, I've been watching Romaniacs for years, and I don't know. We had in the 2008-ish and stuff, we had some guys go over to Erzberg and do pretty well from around here. And then that really got me. I love watching Erzberg, but it's not a race I'd like to go to. It's one of those things where I think you'd spend a lot of money and maybe not have a good time. Right. I mean, you look at the prologue, it's like flat out in sixth on that mining road, right? That's not up my alley. So you'd spend all this money and go over there, and somebody that likes to go fast but can't do anything technical would be starting the race, and you might not. Whereas Romaniacs is like you show up and you're pretty much guaranteed to go. And you get, at least 4 days of excellent riding in wilderness that looks just like ours. Right? So I was thinking about it every year pretty much since Chris Birch won it. But then as soon as I'd start thinking about the commitment required, I'd have a ride here where I thought to myself, wow, we got this stuff here. Why would I spend all that money and go over there? But then eventually it's like, oh my Lord, you just got to try and see if you can do it. As soon as I decided I was going to commit that. Now, I know lots of people that when they commit to something, they kind of keep it to themselves, right? And for me, I have to, when I commit something, I have to sort of make a public, this is my goal, because that's something that, okay, now it's like my buddies, when I start slacking off, my buddies are going to say, hey, that's your goal, let's go, right? It's there as a concrete public reminder that you have this as a goal, so I'm going to keep working towards it. And anyway, one of the final inspirations for me was actually, have you Shane Cuthbertson?
Yes, I do, yeah.
I was in the race, Tombstone race. Oh, it was fantastic race. And I had pneumonia the month before, and I wasn't in great riding shape. And anyways, on the third lap, Shane came by me. I heard him coming, and I was sitting down on the bike, just hanging on kind of thing. And he went by me on the pegs, totally, completely in control, smooth as anything. And I was so pissed off at myself. I was like, he's that way. It looks like he's not even trying because he's in such good shape, right? And then shortly after that, Chris Birch was at the Dirty Moose, and then he had riding schools that I was sort of facilitating for him. And I'd talked to him about doing Romaniacs anyway. So the week before the Dirty Moose is just, it's just all hard work for me, right? I'm out there all week long getting stuff prepped. And then just after, we're having these riding schools, and I was so tired. I was just, my body was drained. I was just sitting on my bike, and he comes over And he's like, you know, Howard, you can do this stuff too, right? You can practice along, right? You don't have to. And I looked at him and I'm just like, I'm just too tired. And then, you know, about 5 minutes later, I was just so pissed off that here is the greatest riding teacher on the planet, and he's given me free stuff, and I'm too tired to do it. So I was like, I gotta get in shape. And in order to get in shape, I needed to have a specific goal, and that was to work towards Romaniacs. And then, yeah, I started actually when I got home. Started, gave me about a month. I was just kind of working on my own stuff. My son was 17 at the time, so every morning we'd get up and do push-ups and this and that, right? And then really quickly, I realized that I was going to need help. So I started looking around like to try and make a real like a ride plan and a fitness plan for myself. And a guy from work runs a fitness thing called Fit to Fly. And the cool thing about that is that, well, I actually called him up and said, hey, will you take me on? And this is what I want to do and blah, blah, blah. I emailed him. And then we talked about a week later, and he had already done all kinds of research on Romaniacs. And it was really cool. He knew so much about the race and what I would need for my fitness to finish the race. And I was like, oh yeah, he's my guy, right? And the cool thing about it is that he could tailor that fitness program around my work and the specific impacts that my work has on my physical functioning. So yeah, that was probably the best thing that I did. And Chris was sending me little tidbits of stuff. And here's an example for anybody that's thinking of going to Romaniacs. We often think of these extreme stuff, like the worst that you'd see in Erzberg, you know, like green hell or whatever, right? But most of these extreme stuff is quite fast. So, yeah, I got a message from Chris telling me, do not forget that fats stuff. Because I'd sent him something about some of the crazy stuff I was doing. And he was like, you need to get out on your quad trails and ride them for hours in fourth and fifth gear, right? Get that, get it so you can go that speed at 80%. Energy level, you know what I mean? So you're not wasting your energy on it. So when you come to the next big hill, you're not gassed already. And if you get into a bottleneck, when you get at the top of whatever hill it is, you need to be get going into fourth or fifth as fast as you can to get around all the people that bottlenecked you on that hill.
Okay.
Right. And as it turned out, there was no hills in Romania in the bronze class that I had issue with. I had one that I screwed up. It wasn't even a big hill. I lost some traction at the bottom, and actually part way up the hill, I had one of those where when I started the hill, I'd planned to go one direction, and part way up the hill, I second guessed it.
Oh,
you know what I mean? And you let off, and it's like, ah, oh, frig. Took me about 5 minutes to get myself sorted, but that was it. The and just like that information from Chris of where to target my training was just absolutely priceless.
The tidbits, so Canadian. The tidbits that Chris gave you about targeted training, mostly it was just with the quad trail kind of stuff, like being able to do the transitions more than the actual features.
Yeah. And, you know, also some hill climbing stuff.
Okay. What kinds of things did he say for hill climbs?
Well, he was actually,
probably more theoretical than technical.
No, it was actually quite general. Cause I was concerned that something in the hill climbs would actually stop me dead. You know, you think to yourself going into a race, like if I can't make it up that hill, that's it. It's done. and you know how much energy, if you have some obstacle that you can't do, you know how much energy that takes up. And then when you get on the stuff that you can do, you're just gassed. So things like, he had me going out and actually training on hills that I couldn't clean, but I wasn't allowed to go back down and try again.
Oh, wow.
So I had to make the decisions correctly the first time and then recover from wherever I stopped. So getting me into the, just training myself to look ahead on the hill. If I saw something that I couldn't decide, stop where I could get started again. Just simple things like that. And then another time that he was priceless was I was doing all of it standing, trying to get into the right body position and being very aggressive. And then he had me tone it down. Let yourself sit down, right? You can't stand all the time. And there's sometimes on the hills, you need to practice those sitting down too, right? There'll be times when you have to plunk your butt down and just motor through.
Did you ever do any training, like when you were exhausted, like did you get yourself exhausted and then go ride?
No. In fact, I went the other way. And this was one of the cool things that with Fit to Fly. Rob is the guy that runs Fit to Fly. You want to make progress every day. So you want to, and you want to be able to repeat it the next day. So it was all about consistent, smooth progress and never putting yourself into his big thing is, I don't mind seeing you struggle, but I don't want to see you suffering. Right. And I know that's a big dirt bike thing. In fact, one of my buddies was mocking me one day where I just called it. No, that's it. I'm not making another attempt. And he's like, now is the time you got to do it. Right. And I'm like, no, because it's not going to be constructive for me because I know I'm at the point where I'm going into the suffering zone. If I do this, then I will not be able to come out tomorrow and ride again. And all my cardio and strength training was all based around that too. Like if you can do one step a day, you know, I did do some stuff in the spring where I was definitely tired. Like I did, 3 and 4 day, big long rides, you know, the kind that like after the fourth day, it's like, okay, you know, I really don't want to see my bike today. Right? It's like, this is not happening. And that was good. But again, I was very controlling of those situations. Like at first, when I started making those plans, I thought, okay, I'm going to go to different parts of the provinces, ride with different guys, so on and so forth. Then I quickly realized, no, I've got to control this because it's about me. Today, I'm doing 75-kilometer loop. And this is what it's going to look like. And you know, one of the cool things is that I was really worried about my hands before I went to Romania. Like, how are my hands going to feel? You know, even some of our stuff, you know, even you do 35, 40K, you can easily find single track where your hands are just beat at the end. Like, they hurt. And I mean, it was always like that right up. And I was really worried, like, how am I going to protect my hands so that I just don't have that? I get a real pain between the thumb and the forefinger, right? Or what I'm doing. Anyways, long story short, do you know how many times my hands hurt in Romaniacs?
Not at all.
Zero. And that will give guys that ride in Alberta an indication of the difference in terrain. Like here we do 75 Ks and on the trails that I ride, there might be several hundred log crossings, right? Some of those you're hitting pretty hard and eventually it starts to hurt. Whereas there, no, it was never hurt at all.
Leading up to it, you did your training. How about going to Romania? Like, what was that like? I imagine you get to Romaniacs and you don't meet any Romanians at all.
No, it was actually because of COVID, actually, it was supposed to be in July and it got postponed till October. So now that puts it right into our our Canadian wheelhouse, eh? So it's not like the 25 to 30 degrees Celsius and humid. It's now, you know, anywhere from, I think the average temperature in Sibiu in October is something like 8 degrees Celsius. So then you climb up into the mountains and it's right up our alley, right?
Yeah.
The other cool thing is that about 2 months before we went, a buddy of mine woke up one day and said, screw it, I'm going with Howard. Yeah, so it was really cool to have him along. Like it was, and he's a completely different type of rider than I am. He's like, hit it hard and send it, right? And I like to more plan, and I'm more about smooth corners, right? And he's more about you see something scary and just twist it wide open, right? So it was interesting. And I've got a physique that's more about long-term endurance, and he's just bull strong, right? So complete different contrasts in riding styles and body structure. So anyways, we got it all planned, and I decided, everybody's always like, oh, you're a pilot, it's cheap for you to go. But because of COVID and the fact that I'm a pilot, I saw all the restrictions and how hard it was going to be. So my neighbor's actually a specialty travel agent, and she got me all sorted. And I was so glad that I went to her, because the plans changed so many times. And when we left, the first plan was we were going to fly from here to, was it Hamburg? Somewhere in Germany, and then to Sibiu. And eventually what actually happened is that we went from Calgary to Toronto to Montreal to Heathrow to Munich and then to Sibiu. It took us 37 hours to get there. Yeah, and then when we arrived, they had sent us special permission slips as international athletes so that we could get into Romania. And got to the hotel and we got there like 7 or 8 days early just to adapt to the time change and stuff. And it was really cool having Nick with me, because I do so much traveling that I'm really, really jaded, but Nick was totally into doing things. So rented a car and went all over Romania just looking at stuff.
Yeah, one of the your posts, you guys made it to a torture chamber.
A torture chamber?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in something Ilba. Anyways, it's near where the bike rental guys were.
Okay.
So we went up to talk to them and give them the GPS mounts to put on the bikes.
Oh, so you rented your bikes?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I rented a 300 XCW.
So, that's pretty sweet.
And actually, to backtrack, I actually, once I decided to go to Romania, I went into Cycle Works and I'm like, you gotta get your hands on a 300 XCW for me, because I'm riding it just for the rest of the year, because I'm not a big 300 fan, never have been. And I was like, I got to ride one all year, because the last thing I want to do is spend all this money and go to Romania and hop on a bike that I don't really know, right?
What do you normally ride?
I've gravitated now to, my favorite bike is a 250F, so 250 XCF I've got.
Okay.
Yeah, I just absolutely love them. The 300, like everybody always goes, oh, the four strokes or whatever, right? And I like two strokes. I got tons of, probably had mostly 250 two strokes. But the big thing for me is that traditionally the 300s have had too much torque for me. So if you can imagine on a side hill, right, you know what your skill level is and how much you can force that tire into the ground, right? Okay, my skill level and my weight, I always had difficulty keeping the 300, keeping traction in those sections. So all that torque was just a waste for me, because all it would do is cause me trouble, right? And anyway, so yeah, and the 300, it feels like a Land Arc compared to a 250.
Okay.
Like it just doesn't turn the same.
Oh, I went from a 250 to the 300 and I found it very nimble, but I went from a 250.
Oh, 250, which 250?
The CB, CRF 250X.
And then I went
to the TE 300 and it was like,
yeah, nice. Day.
Yeah. So, I mean, the 250X had a ton of torque.
But those ones don't rev out as much, do they?
No, it's sort of, you hit a plateau.
Yeah.
It's just like a tractor. And,
yeah. So the XCF and like the YZ FX, they just rev to the moon and they just keep giving you horsepower and stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And the 2020 250 XCF, it's got, I've never ridden a bike that is so quick through the trees when you're sitting down.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like absolutely stunning how nice that thing is in those situations. So, yeah, I mean, the big... Well, I don't know how we got sidetracked onto bikes.
That's okay. It's my fault. I have what your preferred bike
is. No, the cool... The cool thing about the XCF and the, you know, like the FX and the new Honda 250, which one, what is that one called? It's just the plain X or something?
Yeah, there's the FX. I think they have one. Or RX, sorry.
RX.
Yeah.
And then Kawi's got one out too. I don't know what that one, the off-road version. That would be a fun one to ride too.
We were looking for my wife at the 230 by Kawasaki and by Yamaha the TTR. And then we ended up with the 250F. So just like the trail bike, the friendly bike.
Oh, nice.
Seems like in Honda, F means friendly.
Yeah.
And fewer maintenance intervals.
Yeah. The cool thing about the, like that tombstone that I was talking about.
Yeah.
Now that's the only race that I've done on my 250 XCF. And partly my competitors, there was a lot of good riders at that race. And it was like nobody wanted to win the race. He just kept giving it to me.
That's awesome.
It was the weirdest race I've ever been in. Like I had a shitty start and then I got hit hard in like the third corner. And I just dropped back farther and I thought, well, here goes. It'll just be a fun ride. And then I realized I'm behind the leader of the series and another great rider is just in front of him. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll just hang with these guys and just slowly move up. Well, the next thing you know, they're just going this way and that way in the bush and I'm taking the straight line. Like it was just incredible. Every time I'd catch up to somebody, they'd blow a corner. Like I never had to work to pass anybody. It was just like, as soon as I came up on them, they was like, here you go. Have at it, Howard. But the cool thing about the XCF in that one, the 250,
yeah,
is like, I'm 175, 180 pounds kind of thing. On our types of trails here in Alberta and our races, it takes away on every single straight, probably maybe a gear change. Or a half a gear change compared to the 250 XC. When you, let's say you come into a straight around a corner in second, okay? And it's the straight's not very long, but you're revving it past the power band by the time you're halfway through that straight. Now your choice is either click up or just stay at that speed. On the 250F, you just keep revving. You don't have to shift. So then you get into the next corner and you on the 300 have to shift down and I can just stay in the same gear. And you multiply that by all the corners and all the little straights and all of a sudden the 250F is just way faster and you haven't even tried. Yeah, I had toyed in my mind of riding a 250F in Romania. But then you start looking at it and you're like, oh my Lord, like nobody's using it. Like everybody's using the 300, so there must be a reason. If I was to do it again, I'd really consider it.
You rented your bikes. What was that for a cost?
Oh man, I can't even remember. No, and they're all set up for it. Like this is really cool. If somebody's, we went with FM Racing in, they were absolutely excellent. You can choose if you want an old bike or new bike. And I said, screw it. This is the trip of the lifetime. I'm taking a new bike. And you can get the support package. So we did that just because the logistics, if you haven't been there, are pretty prohibitive. When you have somebody taking care of the logistics for you, it's just awesome. So basically, the race every day is sort of broken up into two parts. The morning stuff goes, you get to the service point and you have a mandatory like 20 minutes there. And then you go and race the rest of the afternoon. You know, I'd ride into the service point. And one day, like I watered out like about 5 kilometers before the service point and managed to get the thing going. Just rode in and they're just waiting for you. And it's like, I watered out, need new air filter. And they're like, boom, 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 boom. I'm just sitting on a chair eating a banana and drinking a Coke. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. It made the race experience for me just unbelievable because you have somebody there, like they were so knowledgeable. It's like, yeah, okay, calm down. No, we'll go pick up your GPS and blah blah blah. And I was pretty easy on the bike. I was the bike that I had wound up. Because of the delay in the race, they manufacture parts too. So like all the bling stuff, you know, the rad braces and all that stuff, they make that stuff too. So my bike turned into like a rolling advertisement for them. Like all their parts and all their protective stuff was on it. And I was like giving them grief. I'm like, holy crap. Like I'm going to be riding this tank, right? It's going to be too heavy. And they were like, no, 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 you don't want to break anything. And I'm like, you don't understand. Like I just don't typically break stuff on the bike. Yeah. So I was riding this rolling tank around and I never damaged a thing. My buddy Nick though, like he tore fenders off, like both fenders smashed. What did he tear off his shifter one day? No, his foot peg. His foot peg bent two or three sets of bars. and they were starting to call him Handlebar Nick. it was actually really, really amazing that way. I had initially thought of maybe shipping my bike over, but nobody would give me a guarantee that it would actually get there. And then you're like, okay, I'll get there. And, you know, as it was like I'd prepaid for tires. So it was like in the night, the tire would just magically get changed for me.
Oh, tire pixies.
You know what I mean? Like I could have never asked for a better experience. Like it was really cool. And we had great weather. It rained like, I shouldn't say that. One night it just rained all night long and it was, I struggled that day. Yeah. I just didn't have, you got a race that's 4 days long. It was one of the things that I learned about myself is you just can't race that entire time. And I'm actually on the bike in Romania on the top of a ridge trying to figure out to myself, okay, is this a mental problem? Or is it a physical problem? Like, would I be more racy right now if I was in better shape? Or do I get this mental fatigue when I'm racy? You know, like when I'm really hitting it hard and clicking through the gears and putting corners together, can I only do that for, let's say, a 15-minute stretch and then my mind needs a break? You know, I still haven't figured out the answer. It's probably a combination of both. You'd have these cool trails and you're just climbing up this side of this mountain in the trees, hey, like just going and going and going and I was just having fun. And then you'd on the top, I'm sure you've seen those big grassy peaks that are in Romania. So you'd come out of the trees after this long technical climb into this big, huge, grassy top of this mountain. And you just have no perspective. Like, it's just so hard to tell how steep that grass is. But you're coming out of the trees and you can't see the ribbon. So you're trying to look down at your GPS to figure out where you go in this vast expanse. And that was one of the things that kind of, it really ticked me off a few times, where I would slow down to look at my GPS and look around, try and figure out where to go. And the fast guys were like, they'd get out in the grass and they were on it. Right. And I was just like, maybe practice with the GPS or practice with that style of racing. The thing is with that grass stuff is that there's usually no trail in it, right? If you could find it, you could be like, oh, that's a dirt bike rut. But you can't often see it when you're coming up onto it. And you're looking all over the place for a blue ribbon or something. And then you're looking down at your GPS and the other thing in the top of those ridges when it was all grass like that, I don't know how many times I clicked for another gear. And there wasn't any. You just lost complete perspective because the thing is so huge that you, and there's no, like when you're on one of those ridges, it's like you look way over there, there's another mountain ridge, right? And, you know, there's a steep valley there and whatever. And you're looking ahead to where you got to go. And it's like you don't realize that it's 4 kilometers away and you're in sixth gear. It was a freaky, freaky feeling.
You get that mind, the illusion of standing still on the bike, like not making ground.
Yeah, it was like, I need to go faster because nothing's moving here, right? And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, crap, no, I'm going, this is enough. I know from my bike back home that at those points I'd be doing about 120K.
I imagine the romance of it all gets you through the first day pretty easily. And then you said you had inclement weather. Was that on the second day or was it 3 or 4?
I think it was the third, the night after the second day, it just poured all night and it was raining in the morning when it was dark and we were in the van going to the start point. And yeah, it was the third day and I just did not have got on the bike and I happened to be lined up with Nick. We went off together and usually we're very competitive in those situations. And he just slowly went away from me. There was just nothing I could do. I didn't have anything. And it was one of those deals where, I just wasn't racy. I was still covering ground at a good clip, right? Like mentally you're like, okay, I've still got it. I'm still in a race. I've got to put it, but I was not at times when I should have been aggressive or, you know, when you get that flow going and you're just having so much fun.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you know, when you're jumping off of things and clearing something instead of just hitting everything. Yeah, I just didn't have it. And I wound up catching Nick again later in the day. He'd had one of his big get offs where he did his foot peg. So I caught him. I stopped and we had a little chat and then went off and it was day two. I had two big screw ups. I came down off this thing. I couldn't tell exactly where I was supposed to go. And I saw a ribbon up the side of the hill and I just went for it. It was side hill and the leaves on the ground. And I just had such a tough time with it. And eventually I stopped and I reset my GPS. It turned out that I was going backwards on the gold course. And I had some moments there where I thought, oh, my race is done. Because I'd fallen off the side of where their little trail was. And I thought, that took a lot of energy. And then in the afternoon, I slid my bike down a log off of the trail and I had to get the bike back up on the trail. And that took a lot of energy. And then I don't think I ate enough that night. So then the next day on day three, when I got to the start line, I felt empty. Didn't have anything to give. But that night I ate like a horse. And then day four, I had to start like 5 minutes behind a bunch of guys that I wanted to beat. And as soon as I got on the bike, I was like, I got it today. And I caught those guys in about, it was about a half an hour. I caught those guys and then I was just gone. Like I rode brilliantly on day four. And that's a testament that I was actually in better shape than I thought. And before the service point, I was kind of getting mad at myself because there were some rocky sort of quad trails climbs that I was sitting down on, that I was saying to myself, just stand up and go. But I felt like I didn't have any excess energy, and then got to the service point. And as soon as I left the service point, it dawned on me that all I had was maybe 2-3 hours of riding to do, and I was done. And it was like my brain just released all this energy to my legs, and I just stood up most of the way there. After all this training, when you decide to do something like this, when I first decided, if you'd taken me from when I decided to go and do Romaniacs, if you'd taken me that day and put me at Romania, I could have never done it. But the plan worked. I got everything together. And, you know, all that insecurity and all that questioning of, you know, am I wasting my time and money? Like when I came down out of the mountains and you, I don't know if you saw a couple of years ago, they had helicopters flying over like Manny Lettenbickler coming into the fields around Sibiu, leading the race. Like he was just barely leading over, I think it was Mario Roman or no. So they were neck and neck and the helicopter was following them. Anyway, so that last day was raining and sleeting and I come down and I get on these fields and I'm like, holy crap, I know exactly where I am. I remember this from the helicopter right over Manny. And I'm like, guaranteed any time now I'm going to see the city of Sibiu in the distance, right? Through the sleet and the rain. I was euphoric. I was yelling in my helmet like nobody can take this away from me. Like this is it. I've done it. And then we get into the city and it took us on the side of the road. And then you had to drop down this, you know, virtually a cliff to the side of a river. And the side of the river, so it's raining, it's slippery. The river is just raging, it's brown, raging waves from all the water. And you're on this side hill right beside the river. And I was just like, don't screw it up, don't screw it up, don't screw it up. And it was just like, oh my Lord. And then I was looking ahead and I could see this guy was struggling to try and make it up, back up the big bank, up to the side of the road. And there was a checkpoint there. And I could see he was all in my way. So I just started looking right where I was. And I was just like, screw it. Like just wide open, twisted it. I get to the top and there was this big yellow pipe and a guardrail for the road. And I jumped over both that onto the road and I didn't get hit by a car or anything and then turned and went under the ribbon to the checkpoint and I thought, oh geez, I hope I don't get disqualified for that, but that's what I had to do. And so then from that checkpoint, like I was just giddy. We checked in there. And then we had 7 minutes to get to the next checkpoint and it was just through the streets. So you just had to ride. Yeah, that was lots of time. So you only had to ride like a few blocks to this abandoned building. So putter over there. And to get into the abandoned building, you had to ride up this narrow little wooden frame that went up through a first story window. So get in there, go to the next checkpoint, wait for when I start. And you're in there and all you hear is the echoing of bikes just revving and screaming. And I'm like, oh my Lord, I hope this last little bit isn't too much for me. And it was just this circular staircase that went up 5 floors. They were actually pretty good. On each floor, they had some guys, if you were having real trouble, they would just jump in there so that you weren't blocking any gold guys that were coming. So the one I think it was second or third floor story, as I hit the stairs, I kind of got sideways and wound up jamming my front wheel like broke right through the wooden barrier. So it was hanging out into the open. And all of a sudden, a couple guys materialized and grabbed me and got me going again.
You get through this last building, and then just like you're on the final stretch, ready for the...
No, we get through the building. You climb up the very last, and right on the top was a Red Bull arch. You rode up onto the platform with the arch, shook your hand, fist at the air, whatever, rode down, went through a little photo thing, and then impounded your bike. That was it. Then you walked down all these flights of stairs and tried to find a ride back to the hotel, because the FM racing guys, they were still at the service point, because they were waiting for Sandra Gomez, because Sandra Gomez was with us. Like, she was getting serviced by the same people. And she was the first female rider to finish gold. So we went down, and I was waiting for Nick and trying to rustle up a ride. And just before Nick, I saw him go in and go up the stairs. Before he came down, Teodor Kabachev, he's a Bulgarian rider. He's part of the Jarvis team now. So super, super good guy, super nice guy. Anyways, I saw him. I'm like, dude, how are you getting back to the hotel? And he goes, oh, come with me. So Nick and I, he had this big utility van. And we jumped in the back and we're just like, ah. And we rode in the back. You couldn't see anything. It was just bikes and parts in there. We're just laying on tires and stuff, and get back to the hotel. And he comes back, and he's got his cell phone going, hey, I got some refugees for you.
That's awesome.
Videotaped us all. It was pretty cool.
You got some smack talking from Jarvis as well while you were there.
Yeah, that was cool. One of the first days that we were there, Nick and I got interviewed. About, you know, blah, 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 Canadians, blah, blah, blah. What do you expect? And so on and so forth. And I was just horsing around. So I just said, look out, Jarvis. This is the face that's coming to get you. And I put that on my Instagram. And about 2 days later, we were out having dinner. And I'm just sitting there. In walks his Husqvarna jacket and plunks himself down beside me. And it's Jarvis, right? So we had a lovely dinner. It was Alfred from FM Romania, a guy named Chris from New Zealand. Not Chris Birch, but different Chris. Super nice guy. Nick and I and Jarvis. So I was like, Graham, you've got to record this for me so my buddies can... It's for my buddies, right? Back home. And yeah, and he's like, yeah, sure, right? You're never going to catch me. Yeah. I don't know if you saw the last one, on the last day, I was so pumped, and went downstairs to meet Nick, and Manny and Billy Bolt were there with a bunch of guys. So I just went up to Manny, and I'm like, I had my phone there, and I'm like, yeah, this is Manny Lettenbickler, and this is Billy Bolt. And then I turned the phone to me, but guess who just finished Romaniacs for the first time? And they were all like, their whole gang was like, wah.
Yeah, it's a big thing. Like, yeah, these guys are super talented, but they're still just guys. Like, so they can appreciate any accomplishment.
You know, if you're having a good time over there, everybody's super accommodating, super nice. Like, I've never witnessed anything like the organization that was Romaniacs. Like, from their just the way they complied with COVID stuff and were insistent on it, like, just extremely high level operation, to just like, I never had an issue with the GPS, nothing, right? I had an issue with me interpreting what it was saying. Yeah, but everything was just always just extremely well done. And, you know, the pro guys were just, They were fantastic. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not pro guys. Like the Canadian pro guys are just, you know, like the Shane Cuthbertsons and the Jason Schrags, and they're all so accommodating, right? But sometimes you get guys in the racing environment that are just really, really super intense, right? And you can't approach them. It's like they're not having a good time.
Yeah, they're at work.
Yeah. But man, everybody over there was like totally separated. When you have Manny and Billy sitting on a couch together after the race, right? They're just having a good time, having a beverage. It's just so cool.
Yeah, they know they're not saving lives. They're just riding motorcycles. And they're fortunate because they get paid to do it, right? I mean, granted, they have, you know, incredible talent. So anybody would be happy to have them on their team. But it's all like a win-win, you know, so what's to be grumpy about? And like, honestly,
I guess
if it wasn't for all of us, they wouldn't have their jobs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you didn't buy that TE300, right, Jarvis wouldn't be riding one.
That's right. Yeah, and because he rides one, maybe I bought it. I mean, I got it because it was a good deal.
Now, I always mock 300 and 300 riders. Don't take that seriously. Like my 300 XCW, I just love it. Like it's a fantastic bike. It's not the be all and end all. How do you say it? The modern bikes are all so good that if you're talking like a hill climb, like I'm giving guys grief about their 300s because I need the 300 to make this hill climb, right? No, the hill climb always ends when you run out of skill. It's not the bike. And, you know, occasionally you'll get a little dose of somebody will say something to you that opens up a whole new world for you. For example, last year when I was training, a bunch of guys from Ontario came out and Shane Cuthbertson was like, he trains stuff with Rad 2.0. He was like, Howard, you've been training out here, right? And I said, yeah, I got a fantastic training loop that I've been using. You know, do you want, like, you're more than welcome to use it and I'll come out and stuff. And then, so we did a couple days actually. And there was one little hill that Shane just made it look easy, right? And the rest of us struggled on. And afterwards he says, you know, Howard, you got way more power in that bike than what you're using in this situation. Like at the bottom, just drive your feet like into the pegs, like, and get some traction and let that thing launch, right? While you can, you know what I mean? Like you can't do it on the hill. And it was a weird thing because there was a huge rock just before the hill. So if you tried to get momentum, all you would do is jump off this rock right into the face of the hill. So you had to almost roll the rock and then just explode, you know, and him just saying that to me was like, click. Oh, you know, I can't do it perfectly, but at least I'm trying now, right? There's more available to me right there. And anyways.
Okay. So, you finish Romaniacs, you're chilling at the bar with all of your heroes. like legit.
Oh, man.
And you felt better than they ever felt because I'm sure they never appreciated it the way you did that day. How was Nick doing?
Nick, actually, he got almost to the fields there and, He said that afterwards he crashed in the fields.
Okay.
And he laid down in the mud beside the bike thinking that he wasn't going to be able to get up again and go. And eventually an American guy came by, another bronze guy. Just like, Nick, are you all right? And blah, 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 blah. And that was enough for Nick to go, yeah, I can't let this American guy beat me, so I better get back on the bike. But that was the difference in the training where I still, like, it was like on day four, he was really struggling, right? He was suffering. And yet on day four, I thought I was suffering, right? Or I thought I was struggling. I was mad at myself in the morning that I wasn't standing more and stuff. But, you know, as soon as I went by that service point, it was like my brain gave my legs permission to just go for it. Like, you know what our cross-country races are like here? A lot of times you get out and you're just by yourself. Yeah. And Romaniacs was like that too. And I mean, we may have gone to in a perfect time where because of COVID, the numbers were down. Right. But the same token, you know, it's such a big, long expanse that you can like one super nice American guy named Kevin. On day one, I came across him. He was struggling at a certain part. He was really struggling to the point where like, I just don't know what to do. Right. And he was actually in my way at this big drop off to the right and where we had to go. Right. And, I couldn't get around him or anything. And I'm just looking and I instantly saw a way out and I'm like, dude, just go over there, right? There's a couple of roots hidden under that thing. But he was not really processing it at this point. So I'm like, yeah. Come here. Dragged his front wheel through this bush and then poof, off he went. And I just rode that right behind him. And I got hung up on something and he was gone. And it was a tough part. That part of the trail was really tough. It was all side hill with these big, huge tufts of grass that, you know, if you hit, you were done. So there was no flow. There was, you're going in and out of these little creek gully things.
Okay.
And so I'm following this trail and foof, get hard turn left into the side hill down to this creek gully thing. And as I'm doing this, I see this flash out my right side down the creek gully. Is this Husqvarna laying across the creek gully? And I see somebody's legs poking out from underneath it. And it's this American guy. I'm like, oh, holy crap. So I ride to a place where I can put my bike down and start walking back. I'm like, at first, like in my mind, I'm thinking he's got this thing parked and he's laying underneath it, trying to fix the front wheel or something. That's what my mind was saying.
Okay.
And I'm like, no, that's wrong. And as I got towards him, he had crashed and his helmet was stuck up like on the axle or something, the front axle. He's underneath the bike.
Oh, wow.
And to get out, he had to unstrap his helmet and got out. So we helped him get his bike out of there and stuff and off we're going. But anyways, like on both day two and three, I bumped into him numerous times. And he was really good in the fast stuff. And we just went back and forth and back and forth.
Oh, that's
and,
sweet.
And then I wouldn't see him for like 10 minutes. Come up to a little bit of a technical section and there he was. It was so crazy. Like I thought, oh, I'm by myself. He's lost me.
Yeah. Right?
And then, poof, come to a technical section. We had to climb up one creek, rocky, and the GoPro just does not show. I've watched this section and I haven't put it on any videos, but it was rock ledges and side hill, like, yeah. Anyway, so I caught up to him there and then he went up this rock ledge and there was a second rock ledge that was less than a bike length away.
Okay.
Anyways, he hit that. He didn't clear that second one. So he's stuck on the top there with his rear is sort of hanging over the edge, just spinning.
Okay.
Anyway, so I'm just waiting for him, right? Thinking, oh, I'm going to take a little sip of water and stuff. And he's trying to get off his bike and then move the rear around. And I heard this bike coming. It was a Silver Rider. And I was just off enough so that he could go right behind me. And he hit that rock ledge in the hard part and jumped onto the second rock ledge. So I'm like, ooh, that was nice to see. So I thought maybe I can replicate that. Anyways, yeah, I did. And Yeah, I got by him there. The American guy got by him there, and that was the last I saw of him that day.
Okay.
But on the because I'd struggled so much on the third day, I'd lost time to these guys, so I was behind them on the fourth day, and he was one of the guys that I wanted to catch. And yeah, I caught him, and then we went into a fast section, but I was riding so well, I thought, oh, he's going to be right behind me, but I just dropped him. And afterwards, he was like, holy crap, Howard. He goes, what got into you? Because he says, I was so surprised to see you catch me so fast. And then he just kind of pulled over and let me go. And I think he assumed he was just going to follow me. He goes, you were gone. Like, I just could not keep you.
That's nice.
It's cool. You know, I wish every day I'd ridden like that. But I mean, day one, it's all brand new. And I had two nasty crashes in the morning. And they were just not like total yard sales, but just awkward. And I wrenched my back on the first one. And the second one aggravated, you know, those little muscles back then.
Yeah.
And I wound up having a difficult time standing the rest of the day. And I just, that night, I was WhatsApping Rob from Fit to Fly. And I was just like, here's what I've done. Like, and he just gave me a bunch of exercises and stretches just to do that evening.
Okay.
And yeah, I just stretched it out the next day. It was like, it was awesome. If anybody's going to do anything like this, you need to have a little bit of expertise supporting you.
Getting into it, I guess the biggest thing would be a budget. What should people set as a reasonable budget to go to Romaniacs?
I think you could do it for 10 grand.
How much time? Training time beforehand, would you suggest?
It depends on how I was really out of shape, right? And it depends on what you want. Like for me, it was like I'm putting my family's money on the line for just essentially a selfish experience. So if I'm going to spend all that money, I want to be as prepared as I can. So the time to start is right now. I was in such bad shape that, while I was trained, did my physical program about a year and a half. And if you're riding a lot, probably doesn't take that much more riding, you know, where, I'd been doing a lot of riding that was like, 5 kilometers in with a chainsaw, 5 kilometers out. Well, that doesn't really count. So I had to switch my focus to doing longer rides. And, you know, if you do 75 kilometers in Fallen Timber, that's like 130 kilometers in Romania or 150. Yeah, I did my training loop, to be honest with you, was only was about 30 kilometers long. And that was for my technical stuff. And basically it was designed around hills and descents, hills that... I couldn't guarantee 100% I was going to clean, but that I could do, right? Training on stuff that you can't do doesn't do you any good. You've got to get the skill and then move on to the next thing and then move on to the next thing and be very methodical about that. Like it would do me no good to go and train on Tristan Hart's training because it's just a waste of time for me. We had one hill climb that was called That Effin' Hill. And that was from Nick. Because the first time he had heard that we were doing this and he'd never done it. He came out the first time and he was like, he was completely gassed. We had another guy and I had to go back down and grab his bike from him. And he's a good rider. But he was like, he's like, seriously, Howard, how close am I to the top? You got to be honest with me. He's like, I'm done. I had this risk reward thing going through my head. And you know, ultimately the overriding goal for me was the finish, right? And being competitive was second, if that makes sense. And I'd get on the top of these hills and it would be big round rocks in slimy, wet, greasy dirt with fallen leaves on top. And it's really, really steep. And on the one side is a cliff. Yeah. And honestly, there was a couple of a Polish guy and a Russian guy that kept catching me on these downhills. Like, you know, I lost a lot of time on them. I spent a lot of time dicking around or bulldogging. But, and you know, the one Polish guy, I was like, he caught me on the one time and I'm like, oh, I said, dude, don't let me hold you up. You go. And he's, oh, no, we'll just go slow and easy. Right. And we made it down and then I got back on the bike and we're riding some more and it's still going down. And it had this. So now we're on this spine going down and then off to the right was a little rock chute that the trail went down. Okay. Like think of a V in the rocks that went down about 12 feet and then a single track at the bottom of that, that turned left that you had to hit. Okay. So I looked at him and I'm like, should I ride this? And he's like, oh yeah, it's easy. So I went into it, ate shit about halfway down. Fortunately, the bike didn't go over the edge, right? Gathered myself up, tried to get out of his way. Wouldn't you know, he bulldogs it down. He's like, so we kept going and then come to this, another section where it's big rock boulders and another V that went down about 50 feet. And I'm looking for an alternate route. And I see if I cross these boulders, I can get onto a trail that meets down at the bottom of it. So I'm like, he comes up and I'm like, screw it. I'm going over there and down. And so I'm like, got the downhill, my left foot on the peg and I got my right foot up on these rocks and I'm like kind of bumping over these rocks to get over to where I want to be. And I hear him go off the edge. He's riding this thing and about 30 feet down his left or his rear starts hopping to the left. Then it bounces back to the right. Then it just completely spits him off and he goes all the way to the bottom. His bike got, the bars got caught in a rock groove and it hung up. And I rode down to the bottom and he's kind of gathering himself. And I'm like, holy crap, dude, are you all right? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm all good. I'm all good. Yeah, all good. Only a couple broken fingers. I'm like, holy crap. So totally tough, dude. Eh? So I just stayed with him because we could see at this point, we could see way down that there was a road at the bottom. So I just stayed with him till we got down to the road. And then he rode out on the road and I just kept riding. But it was like, you know, at that point, it was like, okay, the risk reward, you know, I think I played it kind of right.
Yeah.
But in the same token, if the dreams are popping up that maybe I'll go in 2022 again.
Okay.
And I'm going to really practice that. You know, when all those guys say you got to learn how to go slow to go fast.
They mean it.
Yeah, that was, those downhills were just like that for me because I was sitting there looking down and I'm like, you know I can ride this next little section, but I'm not confident that I'll be under control enough to stop myself from going off the next one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And if I can develop that slow speed sort of where you're standing in complete control in these awkward, awkward situations, that would have been huge benefit to me. And I'm actually, you know, I'm actually kind of good at it, you know what I mean? But just not good enough.
All right. So this brings us to the end of the podcast. Harold, is there anything you want to say to anybody? Like in closing?
I'd like to thank CycleWorks for all their support over the years. And thank you for promoting Alberta riders and stuff. That's awesome.
Oh, thanks.
Dirt bikers in general. It's a real niche thing that you're doing something cool for.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure everybody in the community has heard the podcast, all 65 of us.
It's funny. I listened to the one of Kyle and Spencer, and it's neat because Spencer, I've dragged him out of piles of woods in races before, right?
That's awesome.
And now he's riding at a level that I can't imagine, right?
And he's just getting better.
And it's so cool to see this stuff.
Oh, man. He's such a sweetheart. I had a great time talking to him, and we made plans to talk again. I want to have him as my 17th episode because that's his race number.
Oh, so that's for number seven. Hey, yeah. When you get to your 37th episode,
yeah,
that'll be me again, okay?
Okay. I think that would be sweet. I'd like to, yeah.
Number 37.
Have people back on their race number. I think that would be pretty awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Harold. It was a good time talking to you. And I feel like we could talk for hours. So, and we did.
Well, yeah. So, listen, send me a flash in the spring when you want to go out riding.
Sure do. I will.
Because I've got some really cool loops there, and then I can tailor it to whatever you're feeling on the day.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
But I'd love to drag you through the potential. No, don't tell this to anybody.
Okay, I'll stop
recording. Potential race loop and just see what you think.
Okay, that'd be awesome. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.